original call for suspension of the camping ordinance, that there will be a plank for decriminalization of sleep. I know that that was that L7, right, Linda? I know that that was.
Still in there. I think it should be expanded by
12
also.
It seems to.
I think we should take it that
does
half
it. My I can't hear Linda. I'm not at the radio. So what I understand is it doesn't include excluding blankets. So I don't see how you can decriminalize sleep without excluding blankets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you want to?
So I think we have to be careful, and I'm asking everybody to come to City Hall Tuesday, and everybody that comes for whatever subject they're coming on, whether it's for medical marijuana or whatever subject, to wear a blanket, so we can remind people, you know, what kind of a law we actually have on the books, that you become a criminal at 11 o'clock at night if you're wearing a blanket.
David, what's the update? I know that Christopher Crone and other council members have been kind of giving you a wink and a nod and saying, oh, we're going to help out with this, David. What is going on, really?
Well, that's a good question. I got several winks and nods. I went into a rage out.
I mean, you're an attractive guy, but what's
I went
really
into it? A rage out Friday about their winks and nods because, provided nothing on the agenda this particular Tuesday. And then I got called back, and I've sort of made a little bit of peace with Catherine and Chris both. I've got some assurances that something's going to happen April 11th, whether the Homeless Issues Task Force report is ready or not, in terms of decriminalization of sleep language being on the agenda. Catherine not committing herself to supporting voting for that, but will be supporting voting for putting the initiative on the ballot in November. Now, that's the Safe Sleeping Zones initiative. That's not what we're fasting about. So it's kind of, I told her, I said, well, that's almost an insult. I told Craig, I told Chris that would be kind of an insult to tell us you'll respond to the fasters by putting the
wait till November.
Safe Sleeping Zones on the November ballot. Well, the Safe Sleeping Zones is the solution. Is a solution to, you know, the problem that decriminalization of sleep would obviously create. So I don't think it's sort of like step two. So to put, I don't know, it's just really not a, it's not a proper response. So I don't feel like we're going to get too much out of them. I think if they are going to go that way, where they're going to fail at decriminalization of sleep language, yet put the whole thing off on the November election, then I think we really ought to start pushing for some kind of moratorium on decriminalization of sleep or something. We have to really rethink. You know, they're doing some pretty fancy footwork as far as I'm concerned, because I had to call Catherine back and said, what exactly did you mean? You know, this morning I had to call her back. What exactly did you mean, to try to get it clear? And it's really hard to get things clear out of her.
Well, now, is she going to put language on the April 11th agenda or not?
She's guaranteed that there will be language agendized.
What language?
Decriminalization of sleep language. Whether she votes for it or not, I didn't get from her that she's going to vote for it.
But did she say what the language was going to be?
No, of course not. I think it's probably language I provided.
Well,
strike Section A and B and replace it. Strike the sleeping Section A with setting up campsite. Strike the sleeping Section B with occupying campsite, and make Section C maintaining campsite. You know, in other words, make it a truly camping ordinance.
Now, David, you've been on a liquids only hunger fast since March 1st.
Yes.
And you've been on a limited fast before that, no meals. One meal
started January 1st. The city council was alerted. They were alerted this privately in the middle of December.
Are other people still on this fast?
Yes, there's a lot of people still on this fast. Tuesday, I'll be making an announcement about whether or not people should be withdrawing or escalating the fast. I'm going to make that announcement at City Council. I want to get a little more clarity from Chris Cronin as what exactly this April 11th language is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
We may be able to draw back to one meal a day, or I just may simply release other people to do that and find that it's necessary for me to continue on, because the reason for the fast is for decriminalization of sleep now. Sorry to butt into the show. I was really interested in what Linda was saying, because, you know, we do have to attack this problem from both ends. It's the human rights issue, of course, but we also do have to stop the exploitation of development.
I'm going to take my life into my hands and let Linda actually talk to you on the phone. I'm going to explain to her, though, that she has to speak at some distance from the phone in a relatively temperate tone of voice, because there's a kind of a problem. You're hearing, listeners, you're probably hearing a buzz on the line. I'm afraid that's part of our equipment.
There's a buzz, yeah.
And I apologize for that. I hope you can kind of wade through this, because I think this is an important discussion. David Silva, has Linda, and have I and Doug and Marilyn all been working very hard on this issue for longer than these council members even knew about it that existed. And I'd like to give her a chance to do some back and forth with you. Also, I want to something else I wanted to, before I lose the thought.
She's not going to ask me to quit fasting. Everybody in town is giving me a call to tell quit fasting.
Actually, we're hoping you immolate yourself with some gasoline on Tuesday, David. Actually, the other thing is that the rent control, as I understand it, Chris Chris Krohn was going to be introducing something about rent control because of the Cypress Point evictions, which were sort of backed off.
The Texas people, you know, that own the property.
Linda's looking disconsolate because she wanted to break the good news. Oh. But I'm gonna put her on to you. You guys can talk about that. I'm gonna be back in 5 minutes. Whatever you do, don't blow up the. Here's Linda. She's
don't blow
talk.
Up the tubes.
Hey, David.
Hey, Linda. How are you?
I'm pretty good considering.
Yeah.
I can't really talk to you because Robert has both hands in my face. But momentarily,
yeah.
There were a couple things I wanted to pass on to you in a way that maybe other people pick up on it. Are you hearing me okay?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Okay. One is the rent control thing that Robert just... is that too loud, Doug? Oh. That Robert just mentioned. What I heard, I think, Thursday was that a survey result had been in. It hasn't been released yet. Chris Krohn was mentioning this at something. And that survey showed that while it is a kind of charged issue in our town, there's a majority of the citizenry interested in rent control. And this was sort of like a tag-along question on a survey that was more about housing needs. But the other interesting thing is at the Soup Line Supper, the mayor was there for a minute, and he said that afternoon they had just authorized the money for a family emergency shelter for the city.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Even though there's no plan, no outline, nobody to take responsibility, they put the money there. So that I think that says a lot about when they finally hear from the constituency that they can get in gear.
Yeah, when you put pressure on, you know, they may not respond. You know, you fast for one thing and they give you something else. You demonstrate for one thing and they give you something else. But that you do get something. That's true. But I think why we need to. We need to put pressure on all fronts, you know, from either from rent control to human rights.
Yeah.
You know, from
and I want to validate housing. Your fast, too. I hate it when Robert puts words in my mouth, but beyond that, when I did that for a long time once, I'm surprised I not only survived, but I became a little bit more enlightened for a while. And I think that the benefits outweigh the risks that everyone's going to be worrying about, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like reaching
well,
up
I've,
to
I've
God.
Well, my yoga practice has really, really developed because I found that it's impossible to do this without, you know, stretching.
Yeah.
And doing a lot of yoga, so there's definite benefits, but it's getting a little scary.
Yeah.
It's a little scary.
What's important is that it erases the line that people make up between what's real and what's political, and it's a very important thing to do in public with witnesses. I appreciate it. I appreciate your leadership for the rest of us.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to make sure that we all understand that, you know, that human rights is something we really can't even vote on. It's something that, you know, is guaranteed.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's denied in the camping ordinance, you know, mm-hmm. just means that it just has to be deleted. It's nothing. It's no big thing. A city council with conscience should come forward and clearly delete that immediately.
Yeah, and I think the downtown looks laws. I'm speaking personally here, and also the way we've been changing laws to harass youth. The same basic assumptions about what is being human need to be applied to them.
One of the things that happened, I think, this last election is that the opposition, if you want to call them that, has actually somehow or other coalesced a new human rights coalition for us. Youth and gays and homeless now all see themselves as being under attack.
Yeah, because
so
they
have,
are.
We have potential for a great new human rights coalition. So there's a progressive human rights coalition that can come about if we mobilize in coalition with each other. And we really have to really respect each other. And
there's all kinds of ways to unite, and we need to do it.
It's taken me months and months and months to get the gay Catholics to respond to this fast at all, and now finally, they're taking the lead. There's going to be a rosary set every Sunday at Holy Cross for the decriminalization of sleep until it's done.
And I'm glad you reminded us about Father Marini too earlier.
Yeah.
But I got to go now.
Okay,
thank you. Haven't got home from Oakland yet.
Okay, bye bye.
Take care.
Hey, David, you still there? Hey, and that was Linda LeMaster and David Silva. And you heard it first here on Free Radio Dialogue, which even I may have missed some of. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM is your call-in station. You can call in at 427-3772 if you want to be a part of this discussion. And we have, coming up in the upcoming segments, we've got some young folks. What's it like to be in the criminal justice system if you are under 18? We began to talk about this last Thursday with Jasmine. And we have her in the studio back again, plus a significant other who's hiding in the back there. We're going to try to convince her mom to say something too, because her mom is also here. But her mom is reserving the right to keep an eye on the proceedings, keep an ear on the proceedings, and if she wants to say something, she will. Also, I'd like to invite Scott Graham to call in. Scott, you are our man who's going to give us the update on the last city council meeting on Tuesday, a week ago, that considered capital improvements and how they're going to be shoveling their money into the different projects of the city that most of us don't know about till we see these huge cost overruns, like the $5 million overrun of the police station, till we see the huge amounts of money that are given away to merchants downtown, and the tiny bits of money that are thrown at poor people, even as they're evicted and told that that's affordable housing, ha, 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 like in the Beach Flats Dolphin Lee affordable housing hoax. So if you're out there, Scott Graham or Phil Baer or anybody else who wants to give us an update on how things went at City Council on Tuesday, do so. In the meantime, you belly up to the mic. Come, you got to, no, you don't need those. Just come a little closer. So you're actually almost kissing the mic. You have to be really close to it like I am. Yeah, that's right. And say hello, Jasmine.
Hello.
Hey.
Everyone in Santa Cruz.
You remember that voice? That's the voice of the woman who busted the juvenile hall system, or at least gave her opinion of it. And,
oh, yes.
Of course, she's got to watch out because there's a severe critic in the back who may have something to say about this, or may not, depending on how she feels. Your mom.
Yeah, we're hoping to have an exchange of opinions, debate.
Could be a hot exchange of opinions, or it could be a cool exchange. We'll see. Or it could just be you presenting your views, and then at some point later, possibly, when Babs feels more...
Comfortable.
Yeah, you got to kind of get into this radio thing. It's not something that happens all at once. You got to kind of nudge your way into it. I'm going to nudge into this a little bit before we begin talking, just to kind of give a little... little reading from an article called Giuliani the Criminal by Robert Letterman. Giuliani is the mayor of New York City. He's the fellow who arrests homeless people with a snap of the fingers, and he's the person whose police force shot dead a man named Dorismond. His first name is what? Find that first name.
He's not necessarily a bad man. He's just a...
He would do better in, you know, maybe growing flowers in Brazil, I would say. His name is Patrick Dorismond. And here's the tale on that. Giuliani's death squad kills another unarmed black man. A grand jury, according to this article in the Black Times, which is an online newspaper, a grand jury is probing the fatal shooting of an unarmed off-duty security guard by an undercover cop outside a Midtown cocktail lounge. Patrick Dorismond, 26, a father of two who lived in East Flatbush, Brooklyn, was shot once in the chest by Detective Anthony Vasquez during a buy-and-bust drug operation on 8th Avenue near his 37th Street, police said. Dorismond, 26, worked for the 34th Street Partnership as a uniformed security guard and told his family he hoped one day to become a police officer. As Mayor Giuliani urged New Yorkers not to jump to conclusions, some who knew Dorismond suggested he had been stopped simply because he was black. Another unarmed black man, it could have been my brother, said Ina Tucker, who worked with Dorismond at the 34th Street Partnership. The police will say it was an accident. Their supporters will say it was a tragedy. And the police will go unpunished again, Dorismond's mother, Marie, cried, referring to the acquittal of four cops in the Amadou Diallo shooting. A police source said Vasquez was acting as the ghost of undercover Detective Anderson Moran, who would approach suspected drug dealers and buy marijuana. They had made 8 arrests, and Vasquez's partner wanted to make it an even 10, the source said. Let me see if I can make another caller, Moran said, according to the source. While Vasquez waited, Moran approached Dorismond and asked him where he could score some dope, the source said. Dorismond, the source said, yelled at Moran to get away from him. Catalano Solano, 25, and three friends were walking toward the bar when they saw four men scuffling on the sidewalk. Then a black sport utility vehicle came to a stop in front of the club, and four more men scrambled out. He said, it was 1 second, maybe, Solano said. They got out of the car, and then a boom, and that's it. He said Dorismond slumped against the red stone siding of the bar. Cops, he added, threw me on the floor because they thought I had a gun. Vasquez, a cop for 5 years, had shot his gun before, according to a police source. While a recruit, he shot and killed a dog. In 1997, Vasquez was arrested in Pennsylvania after he drew a weapon during a fight.
He was then placed on modified duty. The same year, Vasquez's wife accused him of domestic abuse. Security guard Patrick Dorisman dreamed of one day becoming a police officer so he could help kids and change negative images he believed some cops have of young black men like himself. Dorisman, and I now scramble with my paper to find the right page, was named after St. Patrick. He had planned to celebrate today's holiday with one of his daughters, but instead his family was making funeral plans, stunned that the unarmed 26-year-old man had been fatally shot by police early yesterday. This happened a week ago, case of Patrick Dorisman shot by Officer Vasquez in New York City. Significant, not because police aren't doing it all over the country, not because it doesn't happen regularly, but it's an interesting and instructive case because what we see, for example, is the New York Times today, and that story I read you is not from the New York Times. It talks about what a wonderful guy the police officer was and how this man had a juvenile record, this guy Dorisman. It doesn't talk that he was a black security guard who was off duty. It doesn't tell you about his mother and his family and the people who were near him who observed that all this undercover narc wanted was another bust and shot him dead when he resisted. You don't get to hear that. Instead, you get the mayor of the largest city in this country defending essentially murder, because it's done by a man in a uniform with a gun. I had to put that in because I had a lot more stuff I wanted to talk about on this issue, but luckily I've been deterred from it because I've had a lot of guests in the studio today, and I have with me, patiently waiting, Jasmine here, and patiently waiting in the background, or perhaps not so patiently, fuming and ready to beat me up. It's hard to tell. Jasmine's mom, Babs. So, Jasmine, you talked on the air. Let me see if I can get these folks outside to shut up. Hey, you guys, you have to keep it down a bit. We're on the air. Thank you. We have a lot of babbling people, which is as it should be. That's a natural democratic process. But, Jasmine, you were on the air on Thursday. You called in, and you talked about your experiences around the juvenile, the criminal justice system as a young person. That's what you were talking about.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I was a bit worried that the probation officer was going to grab you and slit your throat or muzzle you or put an ankle bracelet on you or something. What happened? Anything? Any bad consequences?
Not so far. If there are any bad consequences, I'm going to hear about them on Tuesday because that's when I go to court. Yay! I get to have the judge, you know, scream at me some more, and I get to sit there. But that'll be fun.
And the nature of this is you gradually had your probation extended and extended again for what you consider to be relatively minor behaviors?
Yeah, I mean, for someone to be drunk in public and to have a vandalism on them, that they should, like, immediately take care of that. That's a punishable thing if they're caught doing that.
And I want to remind you, you claim you're not a regular user of alcohol?
No, I don't.
Is she lying to us? No, her mom agrees that's the case.
And trust me, she would tell the truth.
You should have heard these two fighting earlier. I'll tell you, these people just don't mince their words. So we're not dealing with some whoosh puppies here. These are folks who speak candidly their minds. The vandalism that you were initially picked up for involved you broke the mirror off your own vehicle, your mom's vehicle?
Oh no, actually, I kicked my own mirror, and it was an accident.
You kicked your own mirror, I'm sorry.
Yes, I accidentally kicked my own mirror because I was roughhousing my house, because that's generally what...
And the police, they have a surveillance camera from a satellite that came zooming in? How did this get to their notice?
Oh, I told my mother. I told her it was an accident, because obviously you're not going to look at a broken mirror in the house and say, oh, well...
And your mom called the FBI? Is that what happened?
Oh, no. No, because she called the police, and she said... Well, because she just saw the broken mirror, and she called the police, and then I told her
she thought it was somebody else who did it. She didn't know it was you.
Did
you know it was her when she... Should we ask you these questions or not?
For breaking an automobile, the back windshield of a mirror. I mean, the back windshield of a vehicle, which I don't even know if it was me or not. But they said it's you, so I said okay, fine. I'm not gonna.
So the incident that you're actually on probation for was not this mirror.
That's not the reason. I'm on probation.
I see. So can you tell us how this originally all began?
Okay, I got a vandalism and one drunk in public, and then they didn't really do anything about that. They were going to have me write an apology to the people that they supposedly said I viciously attacked and smashed their car pieces.
Now, the vandalism was the breaking of a window of a car?
Actually, the window was never... The windshield was never shattered. There was nothing wrong with the car at all. There was not even a dent on it. just the fact that there was a rock thrown at it and they pointed the finger at me. I never even had one dent on the car. They didn't charge me for anything. They tried to charge me $200 and I asked to look at the car and then they dropped it. Like, immediately dropped it. Because
how long ago was all this?
About a year, at least. Like, how long? It was about, like, 9 months or a year.
So it was sometime in the last year or so, in
yeah.
that period of time. And this was, and you were you drunk at the time?
I was a little buzzed, but I wouldn't say drunk as in passing out or anything. It was, like, the first time I've ever used alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't all like, yeah, I'm going to go, you know.
And so what, this happened on the west side, on the east side?
This happened in Capitola, right near the 41st Playhouse. And there was a rock thrown, and I was in a large group of people. So, but they just automatically pointed the finger at me.
Now, they being, how many police were involved?
There's like, well, I was surprised because they sent 3 police cars and about 5 policemen to check this out. Which really, really...
Capitola. They don't call it Capitola for nothing.
I know, but see, the only time I've ever seen more cops than that was when... Oh, you probably heard about that. A homeless person dropped, like, an orange peel on the ground, and there was 10 cops standing around him.
I was there, actually. Yes, that was on Pacific Avenue. Yeah,
yes.
I remember that.
That's the only time I've ever seen more cops surrounding
one person. That was Officer Eveleth, one of his greater... His bigger catches was the orange peel litterer.
Oh.
He dropped one orange peel, actually.
Oh.
But it's another story. So, which we actually played on this station. So you were the police essentially accused you. Were there witnesses that saw you throw this rock?
They had witnesses. They said she was there. They never actually pointed a finger at me and said that I was the person who did this.
Is this accurate? Is she lying? She's lying.
Nope.
We have a disputed account. The mother says the people said they saw her. The daughter says no. We will
they
leave it to you, the
there.
Audience, to judge. They said you were there.
They said I was there. They said, yes, this is the girl that was there. They never said, yes, this is the girl that threw the rock at my windshield. I saw her do it.
Right, so actually
see, that really, really
so,
made me angry,
so there's,
because...
So in other words, let me clarify this. Bab says that she's not sure because she wasn't there. But
I would think that she would be sure because she heard so much about it. She was in court. She heard about it 3 times when she was in court with me. She heard the cops talking about it when they brought me home.
Any girl with blue hair cannot be trusted. I want to point out that the person talking to you has blue hair.
Oh, yes.
This is enough for me to figure the woman is either psychologically unbalanced or probably a nymphomaniac, or maybe both.
Oh, yes. I'm...
Or a psychic. In any case...
Something psychological, yes. I must be a schizophrenic. Obviously, oh yes, that's
have you been thrown into the mental health system on top of this?
Yes, I have, because they said that since my hair is blue and since I had piercings, that I was mentally insane. Anyone with piercings or dyed hair or someone who acted like in the manner that I did.
Let's be careful. What words did they use? What did they say?
They said, well, look at you. You have blue hair and look at you have...
Who said this?
Linda Smith. Wonderful, wonderful
Linda
woman.
Smith.
Oh.
I remember Linda Smith. She's a parole... deputy...
She's a deputy...
Deputy
Wait,
probation
informal. She's an informal deputy,
probation
minor
officer.
Probation
mm-hmm.
person, and she interviews people right as they're coming out from juvenile hall. She can also be used as a counselor, which is completely not even anything this woman should be doing. If anything, she would make someone break down in tears from talking to her for 5 minutes. She should not be a counselor.
So have they required you to go to
counseling?
Get counseling, yes, but have they required you to take medication?
No, they haven't, because they're giving me tests to see if I need medications, because she wrote down I was a schizophrenic anorexic prostitute. Oh,
did she have testimonials from customers who talked about your prostitutionary behaviors?
No, because she has no proof that I was ever a prostitute. Because
is your daughter a prostitute?
No.
Daughter, the mother denies it, but she's probably lying. We give them both...
Look at that nose piercing she has. She must be mentally insane.
Good point. So that's where she picks up these criminal behaviors from. Very interesting. All this has happened within the period of a year... how long are you scheduled to be entangled with either the mental health or the penal system?
It could be till I'm 21, or it could be actually...
You're 17 right now?
Yes, it could be... Mm-hmm. Well, it could be till I'm 21, and it could actually go on for the rest of my life, as they say, because I have wardship now. It's a lovely, lovely thing.
Okay.
Because I've broken curfew, I've come home at 10:30 instead of 10. When my curfew was 10 o'clock, and so they gave me wardship and put me in court and put me in juvenile hall for a couple of days.
Okay, but nothing has happened in the last few days that would alter the situation. You haven't been subject to any kind of retribution of any sort?
No, I don't think so.
That's good. A brief musical break, and we'll be right back. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and... we do have an open line, 427-3772, and this means you, Scott Graham. Now, we're back here. Now, you two just calm down, or I'm going to have to separate you and spank you both, and that could be too exciting for me.
No, you'll have to incarcerate us.
I'll incarcerate you, and then I will. Well, we'll get into that later. On the air, this sounds a little questionable. getting back to the issue, which is, what about your friends? How are they treated by police, young people under the age of 18? Do you have any general thoughts on how that's going in Santa Cruz? Any stories for us that you want to, any good things you want to tell us about the police department? I mean, let's talk about this.
Well, personally, I think that the police are just, well, I don't actually hate police, actually. I do have a lot of respect for them, because you gotta think about that. It's like they're standing up for something that most people would kill them for. It's like, I'm standing up for the judicial system and the government, and I believe in that, and I'm gonna, you know, go off for that. And you really gotta respect them for doing that, for putting their lives on the line to save other people. But then there's just those times when they fuck up, and when they fuck up so much, there's just, No, because I'd have to say, if I had to say anything about how my friends are treated by the police, I'd have to say that the police do some pretty stupid things.
What are the major problems your friends would say, issues they have with the police? Not what do the police do that they shouldn't do, or don't do that they should do?
Well, say when someone's getting taken to juvenile hall, or when they're being searched, they'll say, if you have any drugs, needles, anything like that on you, I'll throw them away for you. I'll take them for you, so you won't get in trouble for that. And that's a nice thing to do for, you know, someone under 18. That's really nice, because then they won't go to rehabilitation center. They won't, you know, have to go through any drug testing or anything. But what if they're an addict, and what if they really need help? Then those police are just, you know, helping that go along, and they're breaking the law, and obviously no child is going to say, hey, guess what he did? He took my drugs away. Nobody's going to do that.
Police take drugs away? I know there's been a huge scandal in Los Angeles in the Rampart Division, which is involving massive corruption from the top to the bottom, might even be murder, planting of evidence, perjury, where a whole substation of the police department is has tainted the cases of probably hundreds of prosecutions, sent innocent people to jail. Is your impression that there's that kind of corruption here in Santa Cruz? Is there, are police stealing from people, or are they lying about what people are doing under oath? What's your impression?
Well, I wouldn't be able to say that they're generally lying because I can't creep inside their head, but what I would say is that, yeah, I'd... Oh, someone's coming in the studio. Yeah. I'd have to say that basically, okay. Well, I don't know if this would be considered... I don't know. It seems like there's too many police around. They're doing too much. It's like 10 police around one minor who's smoking, and there's... Ah! It's bad. It's like they'll... I don't know if it's generally stealing, but they'll take their cigarettes when they're just going to go buy some more or steal some more, and they'll throw them away, or they'll take your drugs from you, and they'll walk away without prosecuting you, or they'll take some weapons from you, or they'll... What actually what they did to me is they took my bracelet and said that it was a weapon because there was spikes on it, and they're not giving that back to me. So I don't know if that'd be generally stealing, but confiscating things. Yes.
So yeah, Babs, your mom points out this was a $30 bracelet. And this, of course, was what, a probation officer in your house or something who noticed the bracelet? Or
actually, it was a police officer that didn't have anything better to do. They asked me to take off all my jewelry and everything, and so I did. And they found this bracelet. Oh, well, here's something we can get her for. And they actually tried to charge me with a concealed deadly weapon because I had a knife that was an inch long.
That sounds pretty serious.
And it was like so dull it wouldn't cut anything. It would cut paper, and I would put it along my finger as hard as I could, and it wouldn't even cut me. It was so dull. It was like more like a butter knife, and it was about an inch long. It was like mini knife, and they tried to charge me with a concealed deadly weapon. Might kill someone with that, you know.
You mean they actually, such a charge was preferred, or they threatened to charge you with that?
I don't know. I'll have to find out on Tuesday, but the sheriff who took it from me was pretty vocal on how he was going to charge me with that.
Now, this Tuesday hearing will be up at Juvenile Hall.
Yes, it will.
And it'll be closed. We will be allowed to bring in your friends, or will you be allowed to bring witnesses?
I'm not allowed to bring witnesses. Oh, it's so hard. They say that you have a right not... You know how you have rights? You're not allowed... Like, if you don't want to say something...
The right not to incriminate yourself, to be silent.
Not to incriminate myself, or, you know... Right to freedom of speech, you don't have that. To have that, you could actually get in more trouble. If you take out your rights and say, I want a hearing with these rights, you can get in 10 times more trouble than if you had never asked for that. You have to have a special hearing. They have to put you on home supervision or house arrest for a couple weeks so they can set it up for you, so they have enough time for you, and it's about
now,
an hour long.
Set up, what are we talking about here?
They'll have to set up a special hearing for you.
So if you want your rights... You have to go through a special process?
Yeah. You don't just automatically get your rights when you go in there because you're a minor. And obviously, minors are dogs.
Have you asked for your rights? Yes, minors, dogs, and Indians. We don't... You know, they're all different.
I've asked for my rights, and basically what they told me is, well, you can have your rights, but we're going to have to put you on house arrest for 2 or 3 weeks, maybe a month, and when we have time for it. And actually, if you lose this debate of exchange of opinions, or if you, like... If we find you... incriminating, then you can be in 10 times more trouble, and you can be on probation until you're 21 with wardship, and we can put you in juvenile hall for.
So it's a crapshoot if you assert your rights, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and they gave me this public defender, which I don't trust her with anyone. Oh, I have her card right here, or here's a better one. No, it's Susan
Jacobowski. Ah, she's back. Help, Susan. I know Susan Jacobowski. Kate Wells, actually, who's an attorney I respect, likes her. I have had some bad experiences with Susan Jacobowski, and she's... I found, for example, when a homeless man wanted to have me present at a meeting, she would not allow me to be there, even though it was his choice, not hers. She threatened, in essence, to dump him if he had me present. But who knows? I mean, you know, different cases. I would my suggestion to people is that they look up the laws under which they're charged with in the law library and start researching them themselves, because eventually you're going to have to do that. Attorneys will tell you this and tell you that, but the best thing is to be knowledgeable and informed about your own case.
See, one of the big mistakes that I've made when I went in there is I completely trusted myself to her. I'm like, oh, she's a lawyer, she can take care of me. Oh,
natural mistake. Natural mistake.
Slaughtered.
It's a natural mistake. But it's interesting, you're saying on Tuesday this case is coming up. I tried to go to a juvenile hall case, and of course they barred me. I gave the mother of the minor, I believe it was, a tape recorder and said, tape record this for your own benefit. they barred her from doing that. I think they may have even barred her from being present. Babs, are you allowed to be present at this hearing?
She's forced to be present.
You're forced to be present.
Yes.
Well,
if she's not present, they won't have the hearing. But I doubt they'd let any tape recorders or anything in there. I really have a thing against the judge because he promised me. He said, you won't be taken to juvenile hall. There's no reason. And my public defender said that. Everyone was telling me that. And as soon as I get in there, 10 minutes after I'm in there, he says, take her to juvenile hall. And they take me.
It was the blue hair. Again, you got to, you know, dress conservatively.
I did.
Did you bring along, you know,
I brought along
your pastor to testify on your behalf, perhaps?
I was... Well, actually, what I did is I brought the clothes I was going to change into. Mm-hmm. But I was dressed pretty nicely, and this was the first time I had my hair down. It was curled, but it was still blue. You could still tell it was blue. And after I got taken in juvenile hall, this old guy comes up to me. He's all like, well, if you had dressed up just a little bit more and put your hair up, maybe it would have made a big difference to the judge, because, yeah.
You could have been a contender, I see. Well, on Tuesday, I guess you're going to get some more good news or bad news, and I hope that you can get back to us and tell us the details of what happened there. Unless, of course, they try to muzzle you, I'm not sure what you can do then. I'm not being threatened with incarceration or with probation or with, I don't know, some criminal penalties for having a daughter with blue hair, whatever the crime of the moment is, or having an instance of supposed vandalism involving a vehicle. And you say this whole thing became extended, right? There was a...
Yes, because actually they... See, what they do is first they incriminate you, and then they put you on home supervision for a really, really, really long time. And if you screw up at all, then they'll put you on it for longer and longer and longer and longer. Finally, after about, you know, say 6 months to a year, they'll get to your punishment and say, okay, starting this date, you'll have 6 months of probation when already you've served enough time.
So how much time have you actually served yourself in terms of restrictions? How long have you been restricted?
I've been dealing with all this court and legal crap for at least a year and a half, at least. Because, let's see, I was starting to be put in a group home because I ran away from home a very long time ago, about, I'd say, a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years. And so...
This was prior to the vandalism incident?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I did that, and I came back, and so then I got put in a group home type thing with one of my mother's friends, and I was restricted a lot there. I wasn't allowed to basically really do anything. So that happened a couple years ago, and then just ever since then I've been dealing with this. It's been fun, but I'm done with it now.
Wow, and we're almost done here, too. We got 5 minutes left in the show. I apologize for not giving as much airtime as I'd hoped. But I always like to give the little red hen a running start. This is the little red hen. She's here. She's ready to kick ass with some modern-day stuff for kids that I can actually listen to rather than this stuff.
Well, before we get off the air, I'd like to say that there is a truant officer that can give children rides to school that maybe might be truant. And if you need a ride to school and it's not, you know, you're not too late, he'll actually give you a ride, and that's pretty cool. And you won't get in trouble. He won't say, oh, she's truant, I'm going to report her or anything. Mm-hmm. And the number is 420-5009, extension 4834.
Give that number one more time.
Is 831-420-5009, extension 4834.
And if you want that number and didn't get to a pencil quick enough, give a call to that easy-to-remember number, 423-HUFF. 423-4833, and my producer, ever active, scribbling away desperately, will have it to give to you if you need it at a future time. Babs, we know you've been the strong silent type in the back of the studio. Anything you want to say to the many masses of admirers? Come on, have a word or two before we have to close down. Actually, got to get up close to the mic.
It's good. Just another exciting step along the path of evolution.
There you are. The philosopher speaks. Jasmine, I really appreciate your coming in. Don't go away. I want to talk to you two guys after this is over. I'm going to give a quick announcement so I can get out of here. What do we got? We were going to do a report on the last city council meeting. I guess we're going to have to postpone that till after the next city council meeting, which I remind all of you is Tuesday. That's the day after tomorrow. Tomorrow, you're supposed to come to the Homeless Issues Task Force meeting at 5:30 and support Linda and Marilyn as they try to put some teeth back into the Homeless Issues Task Force resolutions. That's one thing. At 6 o'clock, I remind those of you who are interested, Christopher Crone, city council member, has a meeting at the Pergolesi Cafe. That's 6 o'clock. In case you're wondering what's coming up on Tuesday, he is supposed to tell you. So hopefully he will. That's 6 o'clock at the Pergolesi. There are other meetings. I guess Mumia Group is meeting on campus. Call 423-HUFF for more information. And on Tuesday, there is a meeting of the SCAN Housing Committee. Call 423-HUFF for more information on that as we try to stop them from deporting all the people from the beach flats in the name of affordable housing. I should say all the people in the Dolphin and Lee complex. That's just about it. We have another minute or two if anybody wants to call in or chat about anything. Possibly the Little Red Hen can give us all a preview about what's coming down the pike. I'm hoping on Thursday, when we'll be returning on this show from 6 to 8 in the evening on 96.3, to have an interview from New York City about Giuliani's latest madness. Perhaps he will have resigned by this time. Let me see. We may have an incoming phone call here. Perhaps a call for... David Silva reminds us to bring blankets tonight, on Tuesday night to City Council. Come early. Come about 6:15. This means you too, Jasmine Babs. Bring a blanket. Bring a hungry stomach. Bring a bunch of friends. Bring a sign. We want to end the sleeping ban, the law that makes it illegal for homeless people to do what all of us have to do every night, which is get a few winks so we don't go crazy. Got it? All right. So tune in on Thursday. We're going to leave a little early so the Red Hen will actually get an extra minute. Can you imagine?
Minute.
Amen. Thank you for being with us, and tune in again on Thursday for another edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides.